Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Welcome to Playful Podcast, your guide into the underground scene where we discover topics on kink and electronic music every week. Don't forget to subscribe to not miss out on our next episode. We are here today with London-born and Berlin-based DJ and producer Tommy47, who has been a strong voice on the underground techno scene for more than a decade. In our conversation, we compare the mentality of London and Berlin and speak about why he moved to Berlin and what the first years here were like, what drives him within music production, and talk about veganism, energies, and how he got into that. I am Amanda, and this is Playful Podcast.
Yeah, a lot of people when they meet me, they're like, oh, you're totally different to how I imagined you to be, because your photos is always, you're never smiling. And then when they meet me, I'm the complete opposite. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's about time I probably put my new face on the camera maybe. And yeah, people can see me smile. But yeah, thanks for having me.
So. Yeah, so happy. Okay, I'm super excited to hear about so many things. But first, like, who were you when you, because you grew up in London.
Yeah, grew up in London, just kind of greater London. So I was born in Kingston upon Thames, which is, I guess, I don't know, 12 miles from the centre. And yeah, like born in Kingston, and then my parents were living in Molesey, Esher, which is in a county called Surrey. So I had quite a like an average upbringing, I guess. Like my parents came from a working class background, worked hard and kind of, I guess, became more of a middle class family. I went to a state school, and yeah, I think there wasn't anything special about how I grew up. I was into sports a lot.
What
running
sports?
Rugby.
Oh, rugby.
I mean I used to play rugby league and rugby union. Good job I didn't do that, because obviously I'm not that big. So yeah, I was like into sports and into music from about 8. I started playing the drums at school. Didn't really stick anything out. I didn't like being told what to do. So I found it hard having teachers around for kind of like teach me how to play an instrument. Yeah, I played the piano a little bit. And then around 8 or 9, my cousin married a DJ that was pretty well known. And that was, I guess, a gateway into electronic music.
Oh,
yeah.
But I just wonder if you don't really like to take lessons or such, how did you learn to play the drums or the piano? Did you just like freestyle?
Just through ear. Like I tried notation, of course, like he'd put notation out, but it was more from ear. And I didn't stick it through. And just the drum teacher used to just put down some money on the floor, Tom, and say, play this. And I used to just copy it. So that was kind of like how it was. And yeah, I guess that's probably been my problem, is that I get bored really easily. So I don't like read manuals for equipment and stuff like that. I just want to like get into it, jump into it and play around and learn from trial and error, really.
I feel very much with that. But did your parents ever play an instrument?
No, they didn't. But they're really into music. Like we always had like my parents' vinyl collection. I would always like put records on, like Fleetwood Mac was like a classic, stuff like that. But they've been really supportive since I wanted to do music. And I mean, anything I wanted to do, they've always been behind me, which I was lucky to have. That's, I guess, who I was. I took any opportunity that had music around it, I was always jumping in. And I was just messing around with like music programs, like Reason, Music 2000 on the PlayStation. I think I was about 14 using that, which I eventually had a track played on Radio 1. And that was just making a track on a PlayStation. But yes, I was always messing around. And then at college, I studied music theory, blagged that somehow, just did like an AS, which is 1 year. And then that allowed me to study music technology at university when I was 19. So I did that. And yeah, so that was the journey up until Berlin.
That sounds like such a straight ahead journey. Like, did you always know then that music was the thing you wanted to do? Or
it sounds really corny, but like from 13, I was like, I want to be a DJ.
So that's when your uncle?
Yeah, it was my cousin married a famous DJ who was on Radio 1 at the time, like super big. And I was kind of in awe of like what he was doing. We used to go to Ibiza, stay at his villa. And
As a kid?
Yeah, 14. Wow. I think I was 14 or 15 when I went into Privilege. It was Manu Mission. There's a party called Manu Mission at Privilege. And the DJ booth was like in the middle of a swimming pool and you had like dancers hanging from the ceiling. And I was just walking like, whoa. I was lucky to have like an early insight into this weird clubland world.
You must have been the coolest person in school. Everyone was whoa.
Yeah, sometimes like he'd park his Ferrari outside the house and the kids were like, damn, who's at your house? And I was like, yeah, it's my cousin. I was proud of that. And he was supportive and I could ask advice about, you know, music production. But I used to just knock on his studio door when he'd been at Ibiza and just hand him a cassette and he would listen to it. And then eventually it was like, oh, I'm going to play this track on Radio 1. And that's
so
pretty cool.
Crazy.
But
is he still doing it?
He's still DJing. He's also acting as a lawyer. He has his own lawyer company now as well.
That's also good to have.
Yeah, whenever. Having a backup plan.
No, yeah, but not only. To have a lawyer in the family is always good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But thinking of backup plans.
I never had one because I was like, I'm going to DJ till I die just produce. But I guess I don't really have a backup plan. It's always just as long as I'm moving forward, I'm kind of happy and everything seems to fall into place as long as it's what you kind of want to do, as cheesy as it sounds. But I'm getting to that point now. I'm like, damn, can my ears last this long as I thought they could? So.
Oh, you have problems?
My right ear, I have a little bit of tinnitus. Like it feels a little bit off compared to the other side. So it's made me more wary. I'm now really taking more care, which I should have done a long time ago with earplugs. It's in the back of the head now.
So there has never been anything else you wanted to do. I think it doesn't sound cheesy. It sounds dedicated.
Yeah.
Like
obsessive, maybe.
Obsessive, maybe. But in a good way then, because I think also that's the key to like, because it takes a lot of energy to always think about other things and figure out plan B's and plan C's. So that means that you have your energy is just focused straight forth.
Yeah, I guess that I have lots of interests around. So I would have never thought I would be vegan, right? So I moved to Berlin and then...
Why did you move to Berlin?
Okay, so we rewind a bit. So at that time, so 2007, 2008, the London scene was getting a little bit dry for techno. And my agent at the time was suggesting, why don't you check out Berlin? It's kind of like where it's at. And at the same time, clubs in London, like the Terminals, the Ends, they're all closing down. So the landscape was getting pretty depressing right then. I did a little recce in 2008 and just checked it out and thought, yeah, it works. So it's cheap, it's feasible, it's accessible. And then 2009, when I finished studying university, I moved there with a friend, and we just took the chance, and I'm still here. It worked out.
But had you ever been here on vacation then?
No.
No.
I literally just came out on my own when I was 21 and thought, okay, if everyone's here, if that's the next step that I need to do to make shit happen, then I'll go to Berlin.
So. And what were your impressions of the city?
It was cold and bleak back then.
What month was it?
I came in December. I think it was December or November. There was a music conference happening at Trezor back then. I can't remember the name. Popcorn, maybe?
Hmm.
And it was cold and bleak, and Ostkreuz. I stayed in Friedrichshain around Ostkreuz, and like you didn't have the new station then. It felt like you're stepping back 10 years. But the music scene was exciting, and like the people were cool.
And Christmas markets.
Yeah, and Christmas markets. But,
but maybe you didn't feel so. Did you think like you made a bad choice then?
No. Well, I was excited. I was like, okay, this is where it's at. I kind of told my friend at university, Alan, who's the other half of Decent Hands, do you want to come out? Like, should we get a studio? Should we do some music together? And, you know, we were like 20, 21, 22 and just super excited. I mean, we had zero money, but we both just grabbed some credit cards and maxed them out. And we stayed at this hostel by Ostkreuz called First Floor Hostel, which I think, I'm not sure if it's still there, but we stayed in this dorm. I think it was like €6 a night, and we just ate like cereal and yogurt. I think we had a budget of like €2 a day.
What? But yeah, coming from London, it must have been crazy.
Yeah, but I was living with my parents. Like, this is the first time I was leaving the home.
€2?
Yeah, I had no job.
How long time ago?
Sorry?
How long time ago was it?
So 2009.
€2 a day?
Yeah. I mean,
that's amazing.
Yeah. I'm probably exaggerating a bit, but we had literally no money. Like, we didn't do anything. We would just walk around the block, and we didn't know anyone. So we just like hang out in Blockbuster and like drink a beer and stay warm, just walk around. And then after 2 weeks, we found an apartment and then decided to stay there. And that was like €500 a month. So like 250 each. It's pretty reasonable back then. And it still is today, which still makes it accessible for artists, although, yeah, it's gone up. Yeah, the journey began. That was 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just we started from scratch. So we had to get all our furniture, grab some stuff from the streets.
This is so Berlin.
We used to go to IKEA to get like a mattress one at a time, so we can both carry it back on the train. That's how we got it back. And then we were also looking for a studio space, so we just walked around the streets, and we found this industrial like old aluminium factory near where Griesmüller used to be, like but opposite over the river. And just knocked on a few doors, and there was a guy that owned one of the spaces who was like a car mechanic, and he used it to store his bits and bobs. And then, yeah, we took the space, and then we had an empty warehouse, which is like 75 meters squared, and just built from scratch two studio rooms. We put in like a toilet, a kitchen. There was no central heating, but that was where our HQ was for like at least 5 years.
Wow, yeah. Very handy.
Yeah, Alan was super handy. I learned a lot from him. He's a bit of a whiz. In Google Maps or Google Sketch, we'd like draw out the studios and build a room within a room. We had them both mic tied in the middle. We had like a live room with a drum kit set up. It was cool. Yeah, looking back, we were super lucky to get that, and just was a little bit out of the way for me to get to. But for 5 years, that was like where I wrote my first album, and we did Decent Hands, the first album there. And the second one, so it was pretty cool.
Awesome. What did you do back then on the weekends? Like, what clubs were fun, or what were your interests besides?
I mean, back then, Berghain was like the best still. It was kind of like, for me, the golden era. Like, just at that point, Ben Clark had dropped his, I think, one album, which became a bit of a soundtrack. There was like another club by the river. What's it called? Rummelsburg, I can't remember. I used to just cycle around at 5 a.m. just trying to network and just meet as many people as I could, and just try and find like an agency, because I left my old one. And there were lots of cool places. Golden Gate used to go to sometimes. Is that still open?
That's actually something I think about sometimes. Like, how important is it? Because I've heard that around, I think also Hector Oakes once said that he was like socializing was a big part in the beginning. And like how important is that in the scene?
I mean, back then and before social media, probably like really important. Like if I go back to when I was, say, 16, 17, because I got my first residency in London and I was 17. So I used to play every Sunday at a place.
You were not even allowed on the club.
No, they didn't know that either. So there was this like message forum. I used to hit up some promoters or I'd go from my parents' house to London, just take a train, take a mix CD and a business. I used to make business cards and I used to go to clubs, meet the promoter, shake his hand and like give him my mix CD and then follow up with an email. And I was always doing that.
Wow, what a businessman.
Yeah, I was hustling, like, you know, just trying to like network. And I think back then when you didn't have social media and you couldn't show what you're doing, it was important. Whereas now you can kind of do everything online. So I think, and back, yeah, okay. So then 10 years ago at Berghain, everyone was out there, yeah, hanging out, networking. And I think it's good to show your face. Even today, it's good to get out there and be a part of the scene.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't do that as much now. Sadly, I'm a little bit jaded after the weekends, but like before I was touring every weekend, I was always making an effort. Or at least on the Sunday as well, people used to come back from the gigs and everyone would like meet up at Berghain on a Sunday, which I'm sure happens now still, but I kind of,
yeah,
I don't like indulge with those days as much.
But you don't like partying so much.
I do, but I'm just I'm getting old now and I'm jaded a bit. So
you feel tired?
Yeah. I also enjoy the quieter moments a bit more. No.
Yeah, I guess it's flows and ebbs of life.
Yeah, yeah.
But okay, so you don't take a weekend off to be able to like go out with your friends?
Not
like,
really, no.
No?
No, no. I am taking January off in 2023 to just focus on music, but I kind of just
all
go with
of
the
January.
Flow. Yeah, I kind of go with the flow. Right?
The most boring month of the year.
Yes, the most bleak and coldest month. Kind of, it's the one month I think a lot of DJs take off. It feels like it doesn't really affect the flow of the DJ circuit so much. You can still DJ there, but I feel like that's the one month that, yeah, it kind of makes sense. There's not so many big shows happening.
But will you stay in Berlin or go somewhere?
Yeah, stay in Berlin.
Yeah.
Although it's tempting to go somewhere like Thailand, but I don't think I'll get so much done. I'll just be sitting on the beach. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. But I am curious, like if you would compare London to Berlin, like the two cities have obviously changed a lot since 2009, but how would you compare them, like what differs them?
Okay, so I guess London, everyone's a little bit more money focused and career focused, whereas in Berlin is kind of the opposite. People are more, they're focused on their creativity first, and I think that's what makes Berlin special, is that it kind of acts like a filter. The people that come here, they're not here to chase money, so you kind of just got everyone leading with creativity first. So there's a different energy here. I think that's kind of like the main thing. And of course, the cost of living's like pretty different. So, I mean, I have a nice apartment opposite a park now, and like I couldn't have the same place in London. It'd just be crazy expensive. So I think they're the main things. Like less people in Berlin are less driven by money and career. It's more about, yeah, just doing the art.
Do you think it's the same as it was, like the same thing that differs the cities as it was 10 years ago?
The same? Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's changed that much. I think people are still attracted to Berlin for the freedom and creativity, the freedom to express themselves. It's very liberal, the hedonistic history here. I don't think it's changed so much over the years.
Mm. Is that also what makes you live in Berlin today?
Yeah, it does. I'm still attracted. I'm fortunate to travel a lot, of course, and I'm always looking for a city that could outdo Berlin. And I'm always waiting for that city to kind of blow me away. And every time I come back to Berlin, I always feel like this still has a special energy. It's hard to kind of like put your finger on it, but I think it just comes down to the people. That's what makes it.
The people, yeah, and I also hear that a lot. But a lot of DJs are talking about the taxes in Germany, and they're like trying to find a better place, and then it's like coming back to Berlin.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, but it's not so bad. Mm. But I know there's a few DJs that have moved to certain countries to get away from that. But I mean, I guess you've got to ask yourself, what's more important? Like, do you want to feel inspired, or do you want to like save some money? So I'd rather stay inspired.
So. True. But yeah, so you don't have that part of the family, but you found, you also said you had, you got some new interests since you came to Berlin. One of them being veganism.
Yeah, so I guess 2000, yeah, shortly after moving to Berlin, I was just YouTubing away as you do as like a 22-year-old, pretty keen. And I guess, yeah, I became interested in changing my diet and I felt great. I used to get a lot of, I used to feel quite sick after touring on the weekends and, and going plant-based and eating more fruits and vegetables kind of like helped with that.
But did any person inspire you or like?
Not really. There was one guy on YouTube I would follow. But yeah, not really that interesting. But my mom has MS, multiple sclerosis, which is like a neurological chronic illness. And so that, I guess, was a bit of a catalyst to explore this more and relating what kind of diet and lifestyle to chronic illnesses. That I found that really interesting. And then I just, yeah, then of course, once you get past the kind of the vanity side, and I guess you are being a little bit selfish because you think about your health. For me now, like the animal welfare side is kind of what's driving me to be vegan. And I get that's what really veganism is. It's about being against the cruelty to animals. So yes, that's something I wouldn't have imagined, you know, before I moved to Berlin happening. And I'm also a part of a couple of businesses. Cafe Ingwer is a vegan coffee shop in Friedrichshain, and the Green Market, which is like a vegan lifestyle market, which happens yearly or quarterly, but it's taking a pause right now.
Oh, so, pause. Yeah. Why?
A bit of a rough COVID, basically. Yeah. So, yeah.
I can imagine. Do you cook a lot of food?
I'm a really bad cook.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm pretty like dysfunctional. So it's like, what's going to get me through? So yeah, I'm pretty bad.
Okay, normally but you're interested in, yeah, restaurants.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Well, I eat a lot of fruit, like smoothies, I'm smashing the smoothies. Like I've experimented with a few interesting diets as well. There's one point where I was eating like just purely fruit. I was training for the Berlin Marathon. What? That was pretty crazy.
But that's so sweet.
Yeah, but it was sweet in what way though? But like, because it's a banana has like kind of the perfect ratio of like carbohydrates, protein, fat. So.
Oh really?
Yeah, I was.
So you could live on only bananas and you'd be fine.
You'd need some greens and stuff like that. So yeah, now I'm pretty just easygoing and. Yeah, rice, beans, salad, Mexican, Indian cuisine, sushi is cool. So yeah, but I'm pretty bad in the kitchen.
All right, funny. Okay, but what are some other interests you have?
I guess like, I don't know, like apart from, I like to do a bit of sport.
Do you feel so healthy?
Do I feel healthy? Yeah, I feel pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, I like running and like I play tennis and stuff like that.
Oh, tennis?
Yeah. Pretty bad, but I like to do that. There's quite a few DJs that play tennis, actually, believe it or not.
Play together?
Yeah. There's a few of us that used to play together. And I had a coach as well for a few years. But like apart from that, it's just, I don't get that much time to have other interests, like, because when you're your own kind of boss, I'm also running like the record label and stuff like that. There's always something to think about. I kind of enjoy that side as well.
If we would like look back on your whole journey, are there any key moments that you remember and watch as those moments shifted your career or changed it or like evolved it somehow?
I don't know, it's so weird. I can't really answer that question.
Are you very much in the moment? Every time?
Yeah, I'm not like, I don't have any set goals, but I have like a vision of what I want to do. But I'm always thinking what's next that I guess I don't have time to just pause and reflect, which I should do. I mean, I'm proud of my career and like what, because I've looked back and since the age of say 23, sorry, since the age of 13 and I'm 36, that's like 23 years of doing this. It's a lot's happened and I'm proud of like achievements, but there's, I guess there's been moments when I played bigger shows and I've been around certain people and I've realized that, okay, that direction is maybe not for me and staying kind of like, I'm really happy where I am now at the moment and being able to play, say, underground shows or like bigger events and still present what I feel is me. And there's been some gigs where it hasn't always gone to plan, and it's made me realize that direction and those people around those events, as much as they're cool people, it's not really for me.
This is really interesting, yeah, because you're turning the question around.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so there's been some interesting like situations where I realized one funny gig I played, which this is my first ever like big gig, and it's when I was with CLR, and they were doing parties at Space in Ibiza, and I was like, okay, it's a techno party, da, 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 da. And I finished on this collaboration with Chris, and the set was, for me, I liked it, but it's pretty banging. And then the owner barred me for life because I played like basically techno, and it was, then I realized, oh shit, okay, yeah, you should probably adapt. And that was kind of like a hard lesson and a strange lesson that I kind of realized, in those bigger gigs, you kind of have to adapt a little bit more than you think you could.
Do you adapt, or do you prefer to only take gigs that are like following your...
I come from like the era where you play to your time slot, and you wouldn't, like, say if you're going to do a warm-up slot, you're going to warm up. Mm. Some DJs, especially now, will start at like 150, whereas I think you have doing an opening set and an awesome opportunity to show different colors and shades of what you're into. So I've always come from that mindset.
This is really interesting, actually, yeah. Because I also hear a lot of promoters at clubs, they can even ask, like, if you're opening a little bit slower, they can ask you, like, but are you going to go up to 140 or 150 soon? Like, please go up, you know?
Yeah, it's. I think maybe that's because the harder sound is a bit more
in
right now. But I did an opening set for my label party in London at Fold a few weeks ago, and that was super cool and really creative. And it was awesome to kind of set the tone, especially as like a label event. And just, it's been a while since I've done that, but it was nice to start with some ambient and then just take it up to like 100 BPM, also some halftime DMB. And then started with like, yeah, just slow four to the floor, some old like Mike Park and stuff like that. It was cool. I find that really, it just gives me like a feeling of, I don't know, excitement, enjoyment again, because I'm always being booked for like peak time slots, but I kind of gravitate towards more being more open. And I think you can do that in an opening slot or a closing slot. So
you like that old way of adapting to your slot?
Yeah.
And being like, that also gives you some creativity, or like a way of being creative. And I, like,
I've always thought of the night as a whole, so there should be like an arc. And I would put myself in the position of a promoter, and that if you're, for me, running a party, you also want that dynamic, that you want, for me, I would like that as well, as someone dancing, like you want the night to grow and to peak. And if you just start hard, it's pretty flat and pretty boring. And yeah, I think you can show way more, all the different shades of techno or whatever you want to, whatever genre you're promoting, if you allow or get DJs to explore different colors.
Is there like, were there ever a moment when you like, because you started so early, so many people, they went to a club and they got completely mind blown, and they were like, wow, I feel so much like, yeah, DJ is really turning something on inside of me, and this is what I have to do, you know, like an awakening.
Yeah, I didn't really have that because I was so young, I couldn't go to the clubs.
Exactly.
So I was just experiencing like radio. So at school, we only listened to like UK garage, jungle, drum and bass, and it was all being like, the output was pirate radio stations or tape packs. Which used to buy from like Slamming Vinyl and Kingston. It'd be like One Nation, Innovation. These would all get passed around at school, and there'd be live recordings of clubs. So that's how you kind of could imagine yourself in the space. So yeah, it was a different mindset. But when I would go to clubs, I always wanted to be the DJ. I always wanted to be in that booth controlling the environment, and just, I found it hard to just sit there and watch or just enjoy it. It's kind of still how I am now. I want to be there.
Yeah, but then when it comes to your own productions, what kind of drives you there?
That's a good question. I think it's always been in hand with DJing. Like since I got into it at 13, I was always making music because I couldn't play in clubs. Even though I was collecting vinyl and DJing in my bedroom, writing music was just part of this journey. And I find it also, the moment when I can kind of be in that flow state and be present. And it's kind of like, I find it really important just for mental health, just to have that moment of creativity. So that's like probably one of the only moments I'm feeling super present and not worrying about anything else. And I kind of find if I'm not being creative, or if I haven't written music for a long time, I can feel a bit grumpy or a bit weird and down. And as soon as I'm in the process of writing music, I'm feeling great. I'm feeling happy. I'm feeling like it's just giving me this sort of energy. And yeah, it's strange, but it's almost like meditation.
Yeah, I was going to say a flow cleansing.
Yeah, it's basically, I think, being creative and writing music or like running, stuff like that. I need to just be in that.
But flow. Now you mentioned meditation. That is also something that can often be associated with veganism.
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 Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Somehow. Yeah,
I guess it's kind of like healthy
and the, you know, the...
I think it's people kind of presume that being vegan is in that world because a lot of people are connected. But essentially, like, veganism is just an ideology that you are against animal cruelty. That's it.
Mm. And then you're a little bit more aware, about that. And often I feel that spirituality in that sense, like when you're like listening more inwards than outwards, that's also something that makes you be aware of like, oh, animals feel, or, you know,
you definitely become more connected when you're thinking of other sentient beings on planet Earth that you're sharing this planet with. And when you realize what they're going through, you definitely feel this extra energy.
Do you meditate?
I should meditate, but I will come to the end of the day and do this really short yoga routine and then just sit there and pause and kind of reflect on the day. I try to do that. That's kind of more of a recent thing the past couple of years, but I'm still getting to that point where I can just meditate for a long period of time, but I'm still working on that.
You are a little bit, are you spiritual? Like,
I don't know what that means.
It can mean anything. Like, it can mean like,
I have a yoga mat.
Yeah, you have a yoga mat.
I have a yoga mat that's in my suitcase when I do gigs.
Mm.
I get to the hotel room and lay that out. And like, I have these little things that help me feel like I'm at home. I like to try and stay in a routine. And I guess, is that spiritual? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, spiritualism is so, a broad question.
Yeah,
too.
I'm aware of, I guess, our actions and consequences with animals or the planet, and I guess, is that being spiritual? Yeah,
I think everything.
I have some
be.
Crystals in the apartment. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what they are or what they do, but
that's
like
definitely the step over there. Yeah. But yeah, that's cool. Okay, so you believe in energies, or everything is obviously energy, but
yeah, and I can feel energies of people. I don't know if you can, so you can
definitely
walk into a room and you can feel if it's slightly off, if there's some negative vibes there, for sure. I think, yeah.
You're a sensitive person, maybe.
Yeah. I'm a Virgo, so I think there's that.
No, I always
perfectionist, sensitive.
Virgo. Yeah, the virgin. The sea lady.
The sea lady. I don't know if she's a sea lady, but she's a lady. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't she in the sea? It's like Ariel in Disney.
Sure.
No.
Is she a mermaid? I'm not sure.
Mermaid, exactly. Okay. Are you that? Okay.
I think I'm not sure what the traits are, but yeah, I do find that kind of interesting. And when there's a full moon, people always say like you can struggle to fall asleep and stuff like that. I kind of believe in that.
I do too. I sometimes cannot sleep at all. But that's also, it's also, you can also explain it. Like the water goes up, we're like, how many percentage are we filled with water, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We're all one.
We're all one. Okay, that says it all. Yeah, so if we go back to your music,
yeah,
I can also like combine it, because when you create the set, do you feel that we are all one on the club?
When you have those moments, those like awesome gigs where everything does kind of fall into place, yeah, for sure. And that's that high, I think, that you're chasing, is that moment where you're kind of like this tribe and you'll get it. You're on that same wavelength. I think, that's the kind of high you chase as a DJ, and to try and conjure that up as best you can.
Mm. Yeah. Do you feel, this is something I thought about, like, did you ever enter a club and the energy was really low and you felt you just couldn't bring it up?
Yeah, it's happened, for sure. But I think you learn as a DJ, the more you go through those processes. Like when I was starting out and I was like 17, 18, I would lose the dance floor a lot. I was like, fuck, what am I doing? Like, and so the more of those experiences that I had, because back then people weren't coming to see me play. So it was like, you really had to do your, you know, really had to work and read the room. And so that's what I learned from a young age, was reading the room, seeing what vibes would work, and then maybe leaning more into those that did. And then once you had the crowd's trust, you could kind of experiment and push things a little bit further and start dropping in tracks that maybe they weren't expecting. But yeah, those moments are pretty daunting. And now I'd say if there is that moment, I kind of know how to get out of it and read the room and start directing things a little bit more. But I think it's important to go through those points. And I think that's where you learn to DJ, is having those moments, not always having a crowd that is packed and there and it goes and is cheering for every single track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, someone commented on your hair set that, for me, this man defines techno. He doesn't sell out. And what's your view on like staying true to techno and not compromising?
I mean, that's, yeah, I'm flattered that someone thinks that. I'm not sure I can like fully agree, but I think
I feel a lot of people have this vibe with you.
I think it's so subjective who is selling out and who's not these days, especially with social media. It's all become quite blurred. What is underground? What is not underground? I think all I've done is like, I've had a clear vision and I've tried my best to stay true to that vision. And ultimately that, when you follow that path, you get so much more back rather than veering off and maybe following trends, which might get you like a quick fix or a faster path, which might not, I don't know, play out the way you wanted to. I don't know. I just try and do my thing and have fun in the studio and do the label and release tracks that I enjoy doing. It's just it's just my journey that I'm trying as best to stay as true as possible to myself.
Mm. And the true you is definitely techno.
What is techno? I mean, I think like I have an interest also with other genres like drum and bass, jungle and stuff like that. And I've always tried to weave that into techno. And I kind of feel the techno that I like isn't a sound, it's more concept. So for me, techno is always moving forward. And I think that's what it originally set out to be back in the 90s. It's just a concept of moving forward. And I'm not really into playing tracks that sound nostalgic. I don't like playing 90s techno very much. I don't want to hear a 909. I don't want to hear sounds that I've heard before. I want to hear sounds that are kind of like fresh and exciting. And that's what I'm also trying to do with the label, is just show tracks that push in that direction.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's interesting that you feel the techno is something that is moving forward. Because also that is something everyone is always connecting your label with. It's forward thinking. It's forward. It's new thinking. And it's like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I try. I it can also sound, I don't know, a little bit cheesy to kind of big yourself up like that.
And no, I think it sounds like, how can you, like, you know, how can you assume what the future holds? Like, that's also something that is,
yeah, I like to play scary, with. Yeah, know? For me, I just like this kind of slight sci-fi edge. I wanted to sound a little bit futuristic. That's just kind of like what I find exciting in this imaginary kind of sci-fi kind of world. And yeah, and again, I want to hear ideas and textures and sounds that haven't really been done before so much. And
this is it, because I mean, the sci-fi is not always going to be the future. Maybe it has been now, but you are pushing it with other instruments too.
Yeah, yeah.
And how do you find that when you meditate? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. No, but I'm with the label. Like, I'm just trying to like cross-pollinate different genres and stuff like that, and just try and keep myself excited as well. But what was that comment again? But yeah, I'm flattered by that person's comment on YouTube. But
yeah,
like I said, I think this whole idea of who's not selling out is very subjective now. And some people might say I have sold out, some people haven't. I don't know, like it's such a weird thing like these days with social media and everything like that. But
That's
a nice comment. Thanks.
Do you stay very, like, do you try to not be affected by what people think and say and opinions and such?
I think I like to think that I am pretty focused and stay on my path, but it's hard not to take that in. And I probably do worry too much about what people think of me and will read comments. But generally, like, my comments and feedback and, like, the whole kind of community around what I do is pretty positive. And yeah, I'm fortunate to just do what I want to do. Like, if I want to do a drum bass set, I do a drum bass set on her. If I want to do something deeper, I do that. If I want to do, yeah, I don't really...
you don't feel limited by anything.
Yeah, and somehow it kind of all works together. And I think there's a lot of other people that are into the similar sound and direction, and I hope that grows. And
I think that's also interesting. Like, what do you think is what would you like to see more of when it comes to new productions and these things?
I mean, with the scene, I'd like it to get a bit more varied and people just to take more risks. Maybe promoters also to stay with their vision and have more people building small little subgenres. And I'm also interested in maybe pushing more like 170 DMB stuff, but in a way that is falling into the aesthetic of techno and the label and this kind of moving forward sound.
What would you say what has shaped you musically and to being where you are now, or to producing what you produce right now and play what you play?
I think my kind of teenage years, I think that shapes most people, like what they're into in their teenage years. And that was most definitely like jungle, drum and bass. And even though I was still collecting techno and everything at that same time, I think those years at school definitely kind of bleeds into what I do now in the studio and how I kind of DJ. So overdrive, distortion, broken beats, like syncopation, I guess, playing the drums or like enjoying different rhythms. That's kind of all falling into what I do. I'm not always producing just straight up techno. I actually find that quite boring. And when I am trying to make something fall to the floor, it's really hard to stay with it. Because I'm like, what if I just move this kick drum over here and break the rhythm up? I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. So definitely breaks and syncopations. Been a big influence on what I do.
So did you ever listen to anything else? Did you listen to like metal or, you know?
Not really, because the school I went to, if you kind of, there are two, it's very tribal. So you had the kids that listened to like electronic music, like garage, jungle, drum and bass, and the kids that listened to grunge and rock. It was like to choose your group. So I didn't really get into like live, like more like live bands and stuff till I went to university. So like listening to, I don't know, Smashing Pumpkins or, I don't know, Tom York and Radiohead and stuff like that.
Mm.
So yeah, that came a little bit later. So it was always the sounds that I was listening to as a teenager that I think led into the studio more so, I think.
Yeah. Thank you so much. If you're a Patreon, you get to listen to the extra material where Tommy47 shares his view on what the techno scene is lacking at this time, as well as what it needs less of, and much more. Go to patreon.com/playfulmagazine.
It's either this or it's that. This is this or that.
So I'm going to say two different things and you will let me know which one you prefer. Sci-fi or horror movies?
Sci-fi.
Yeah, I got that sense. But do you watch horror at all?
Not really. It's a bit boring sometimes.
You think boring? Scary. No.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. More sci-fi for sure.
Okay.
I'm really shit with film trivia. So like, don't ask me which films or which actors
I
like.
Because I feel I'm the same there. I don't remember what their names are.
Yeah, it's the same with music. I never remember what I'm playing. Apart from the artwork. So like when I was playing records, that's all, I just remember the artwork.
This is something I've thought about. Yeah. I thought like...
Yeah, I mean, because when I would be DJing, especially playing records, this kind of like sixth sense would come like, take that record. And your mind would just imagine the front cover of the vinyl, and you just go and dig that out, boom, play it. So like when I transitions to using CDJs, that's kind of all gone unless you are going to painstakingly put all the artworks on each track, which I don't do. And so you're just presented with a big list, which I find really, overwhelming. So that was quite hard to get used to transitioning to like how to pull out tracks. So I just like used big words and tags like deep, peak, and all this, and just that would trigger it. Or I don't know, I'd pick out something funny from the artist's name or track title. But
okay, yeah. That's a great tip for anyone who is also more visual than, you know.
Or you could probably be sensible and like put the cover out there, or like, I know one DJ uses different colors for different feelings, like red for peak, blue for deep, stuff like that. And that's so you just flick through and you see the colors.
But, yeah, I've heard about that, yeah. I think. Hmm. Okay, preferably work. Now I know this one.
Okay.
Or we all know this one, but I'm going to say it anyway. School teacher or chef?
For me, to work.
Yes.
It'd probably be a teacher, because it's more of service. And I find that quite, I find that more appealing.
I thought you were going to say because you can't cook.
That's your obvious thing. But like, yeah, I recently found I find it...
More pleasurable.
More pleasurable to kind of give something back. And
do you also teach music?
No. I'm not good enough to teach, but I just feel like being of service. So, and I'm a bad chef. So yeah, there you go.
Okay. YouTube or Netflix?
Netflix.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Bored or enthusiastic?
Enthusiastic.
Yeah. Cocktails or coffee?
Coffee.
I feel the mate coffee. Yeah, addicted to caffeine?
Yeah, I mean, I love specialty coffee shop. I'm also a co-owner of Cafe Ingvar in Felix Shrine, so everyone should check it out.
Yeah. What's your specialties there? Vegan stuff, I guess.
Yeah, so it's like everything vegan and with a slight leaning towards more of a healthy lifestyle. But there's like cool raw cakes, cookies and stuff. But it's all like organic, whole food. And then we're really into specialty coffee. So it's,
special really coffee?
Speciality. So it's like single origin. So the beans come from one farm.
Ah.
So like there's a second wave coffee movement, which would be Starbucks, for example. And the third wave coffee movement is beans that come from one farm. And it's like, it's kind of like, natural wine.
Did you visit a farm?
No, I haven't visited a farm. I'd like to.
Yeah? Where's it?
No, I would like to, but our beans are roasted mainly from Bonanza, which is a Berlin roastery in Berlin. So of course, like they're getting beans from Kenya, Ethiopia, Colombia.
But really nice.
It'd be cool to visit a farm.
Yeah, sure. Super cool. Yeah. Introvert or extrovert?
I'd say probably introvert.
I think that it was in the extra material we talked more about. Yeah, this.
People would probably presume maybe I'm an extrovert, maybe, but I'm actually, I feel like a bit of both, but probably leaning more towards introvert. Like I'm happy to be alone at home and just, be charged. But so I guess, introvert.
You don't feel the need to be out with a lot of people?
No, not really. No.
No. vegan schnitzel or vegan hot dog?
Depends what the what it's made from. Because I've had a really bad vegan cauliflower schnitzel. So it depends on what the kind of the ingredients is. Maybe it's like a tofu, maybe it's a seitan.
Both are good,
yeah. Let's say the hot dog.
Okay. Interesting. What does that say about you? I don't know. Anyway.
I'm impulsive because I could have been either way.
Very casual. Yeah. Okay, so we have also received some questions from some of our followers. Yeah, I couldn't think of them because okay, this is actually super fun, I think. So the first question someone asked was if you could give us 2 to 3 up and coming names that we should listen to.
Okay. This is maybe going to be a bit biased, but okay, there's some great new artists. One would be Quelza from France, who lives in Berlin. I think you've had him in your magazine. Another one would be Flaminia. She's from Italy, living in London. And the third, it's tricky. Third, okay.
It was actually 2 to 3, so we can.
Okay, there you go.
It's all fine. Right, Perfect. What is your best advice for someone wanting to create their own label?
Take your time and take your time with your visual identity and just go for it and just trial by error. Like, don't wait till you think you have it figured out. Just go for it, start doing it. It will come together. But the most important thing is just like taking that first step, and you're never going to feel like you're ready, but just take that leap of faith, do it.
Good. Is there anything you need to have figured out before?
You definitely want to work out maybe 6 months or like to a year worth of releases. How many are you going to release? Are you going to do physical? Are you going to do digital? Then you're going to want to find a distributor. So that's the next step. Then you're going to work out, are you going to pay for it all yourself? Or do you want to get a P&D deal, which is like production and distribution deal with the vinyl distributor? So there are questions to ask. But ultimately, I think just, don't be scared and just go for it and be prepared to kind of make some mistakes. But it's really easy to just, especially if you're doing just digital, to get a label up and going.
Great tips. Last question that we picked was, what would you do if you were not working with music in any way?
Yeah, it'd probably be, I'd be my own boss in some capacity and probably running a few businesses that are definitely leaning into the vegan
world. A businessman. You know? Yeah. Yeah, but you already do, but exactly.
Yeah, I think trying to give something back in some way, I think that gives you the most kind of, it's the most rewarding thing in life to kind of be of service a little bit. So I feel, it'd be some businesses aligned with veganism, I guess.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That was really great. This was it for Playful Podcast this week. But please follow, subscribe and listen to our next episode. And if you want to have a say about future artists or even ask your own question to one of our guests, follow us on Instagram and make sure to add your question when we lift our coming guests. Thank you so much for joining and see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.